Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. On Anchorman, he's like, I got Tom O'Leary and Jack Johnson right here. Anchorman.
Yeah, anybody who names their fists.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
You know, of all the things, not your arm, your fist.
I know. I think I'd go like random. Like, I've got Mike Schmidt and Ryan Sandberg right here for you. People would be like, they'd be so confused. They'd be like, what? 1980s baseball stars?
Yeah, I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why baseball? I've got Michael Jordan and his friend Scottie Pippen.
Ah, we worked Michael into the show.
Yeah, as you choke to death. I know. Don't choke to death, man. Don't do it.
I'm good. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I should just be like, you know, vague threats anytime I want to make a vague threat.
If you want to go modern, I've got LeBron James and the rest of the Cavaliers. Because they are,
all of them
together might equal one fist.
Might.
Might,
if we're lucky.
If they're lucky. All right, everyone. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 2. This is kind of a perfect, timely podcast. We are talking about hardships in the LGBTQ plus community right here during Pride Month.
Hey.
The last weekend of Pride Month, actually.
Yeah, look how good we are about scheduling.
I know. We just nailed it.
Boom.
All right. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and this is my co-host, as always,
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
Yes, you are. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I've called you in today to talk about...
I'm so nervous. I'm sweating.
I know. We're going to do her evaluation live on air.
All right. Here's where you need improvement immediately.
Yes.
My goodness.
So this is an interesting topic of conversation to have right around this time, because this is obviously, especially in this neck of the woods, and I say Washington State specifically, where we're talking about LGBTQ issues all month, because it's Pride Month. And up here in Washington State especially is one where this conversation seems to be really actually out in the open, as opposed to other places.
Yeah, like better received for sure.
Well, definitely better received for sure.
Yeah.
In this particular portion of the country. But but like there's actual conversation happening, which is
also not just like the outer fluff.
Yes.
That kind of surface level talk. Yeah.
So we talked to two pretty cool organizations, both based in the city of Seattle. The first one was Seattle Counseling Service, the executive director, Anne McGettigan, which I nailed.
Yeah.
Nailed the name.
You nailed it again.
I did it again. It flows right off.
If I were to do your PDP right now, I would say you're really good at pronunciation of names.
you need improvement in every other area.
Yeah, clearly.
However.
Clearly. But the names you got.
Gotcha. And then. And we also talked to Brandon Knox, the program manager for Lambert House. They both deal with LGBTQ youth, mostly in the Seattle area, but it was kind of interesting to hear them talk about, you know, their reach and where they want to go. So overall, both two very interesting conversations, two very timely conversations about this particular issue. The national conversation on this issue is a little bit... it's a little bit heated, and a little bit, I think, sometimes maybe missing the point.
Just a little.
Yeah, but overall, I think out here in this particular part of the country, one thing I was struck by, even though we like to think of ourselves as a progressive area that embraces LGBTQ plus community, to hear them both say that this is still a struggle was definitely eye opening for me anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something.
Yeah, well, I mean, you still hear about like businesses who say, you know what, your gay wedding, your lesbian wedding, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to provide a cake right. or flowers or do services that you're coming to seek because of your orientation.
Yeah, your lifestyle. Yeah, and you're referencing the court case that just happened yeah. literally like 2-3 weeks ago. So, and I mean, there are still portions of the country that not only just view this in like we want to have the dialogue around yeah. LGBTQ, but tragically are very angry about this particular yeah. conversation and kind of I think that it also comes out in both of these conversations with both of these two individuals that sometimes like these folks just want to find a way to basically find themselves
yeah.
more than anything. They're not looking to make some sort of grand societal impact. They're really more looking to find themselves.
Yeah. And at no point, it's never been something I've ever thought or felt that anybody who is searching for support mm-hmm. and looking for themselves, and if they are questioning their mm-hmm. identity, I don't feel the pressure of having mm-hmm. anything forced onto me.
Yeah.
I don't understand why anybody else would.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it either. I've never felt, you know, ever
yeah.
that the agenda has been about converting straight people
exactly.
to being gay.
Yeah.
So I've never understood,
vitriol.
I've never understood yeah. the pushback on the particular issue. Yeah. I think a lot of times they're trying to do what anyone else is trying to do, which is, live their lives, sort of peacefully mm-hmm. with peace of mind and be able to, become friends and even, you know, have long-term romantic relationships with the people that they're attracted to.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it's all that hard.
No.
It doesn't impact me in any way at all.
Yeah.
So frankly, I just don't see mm-hmm. that. But you know, I mean, growing up in the area we've grown up in, which did get this issue a little bit faster than some other places mm-hmm. did. You know, you can see why it's still a struggle.
I think too, like adults forget what it's like to grow up sometimes, you know,
to just grow up period.
Yeah, just period. So yeah. like, you know, you're an adult, you've been an adult for however long, and you forget like mm-hmm. what it was like to go through puberty
mm-hmm.
or to have people make fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that every day anymore as
yeah.
an adult. You're expected to behave a certain way
right.
and the people around you are expected to behave a certain way and
mm-hmm.
we're all supposed to be civil. But when you're a kid, you know,
yeah.
stuff isn't so civil. And kids can be cruel, and
yeah.
they're very honest about
yeah.
what they
oh,
think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that,
sometimes
and that,
cuts deep.
I know. And I think that the funny thing about it is that, like, that is something that you don't have to be homosexual or a part of the LGBT community to face.
No.
Is that notion of feeling ostracized
yeah.
or being
Everybody
picked,
goes
or being
through
picked
that.
On. Lots of people go through that.
Yeah.
And I think if we found that common thread more often, we actually would probably be able to you know, make this issue even, you know, even better than it is
yeah.
today. What was I going to say? I had something.
Was it good?
I thought it was profound. It apparently was
You like
not.
How I laugh at you? I'm yeah. sorry.
Yeah, I don't
I'm
know.
I'm a jerk.
Anyway, so the two interviews were really, they were really great. Really neat to see a couple of organizations trying as hard as they can to reach out to frankly vulnerable populations.
Yeah.
These are the folks who are higher rates of suicide mm-hmm. than their straight heterosexual counterparts. Mental health issues,
yeah.
Bullying still persists, dangerous sexual activity oftentimes happens in this community. Not necessarily, yep, homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly a lot of things that these two organizations tackle. Did you have a question of the pod before we get into this particular
thing?
Yes.
So I think for kids, when
yes.
you're growing up,
mm-hmm.
like you feel like you're a freak in some way if you don't fit into what is considered normal around
sure.
you, right?
Yeah.
So that could be something that anybody in the LGBTQ community would say probably agree with.
Uh-huh.
Now, Philip Kerrigan.
Yes.
If you had, if you wanted to be, quote, normal.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay.
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 If you had something about yourself
yeah.
that you could change
yeah.
or fix to be, quote, normal, what would you change or fix?
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Let's talk about your insecurities.
Okay. Okay. So, so I break it down into two spots.
Okay.
Okay. Physically.
Yeah.
Physically speaking, I would love to not be hunched over all the time. For those of you who met me, I'm like 6'3 standing up straight, but I got like my neck is moved forward and all that sort of stuff. If I could have like broad Ben Affleck shoulders, I would do it.
What about broad Ben Affleck back tattoos?
I think I'd probably avoid the broad, weird Ben Affleck back tattoo.
Don't do that.
But definitely the broad Ben Affleck shoulders I could get into.
Okay.
So that's physically.
Okay.
Boy, in terms of like personality wise, to be.
Are you perfect?
No. I think I'd probably like, well, I'm trying to think back to like what made me insecure to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think that probably, I probably was more of an emotional kid. Like,
yeah.
you know, like definitely like I took things really personally. So
sure.
I probably would want that to be erased. Like the idea of like some people probably aren't even talking about you personally, and
yeah.
yeah, you take it real, like, oh god, and then it really just drives everything else, and then before you know it, your reactions are all,
you're kind of neurotic about it, yeah.
And so I would probably say at the time growing up, that's why I sympathize with these two groups, because you always think like the two organizations we talked about, because like I was dealing with insecurity, and I was just what you would call quote unquote like normal,
yeah,
right, like I was just a regular like normal quote kid,
yeah,
right. And so to have that insecurity, but then on top of that also be going through something that maybe you're not quite sure like what it is, mm-hmm. and who you're attracted to and all those sort of things, man, I couldn't even imagine it.
Yeah,
couldn't even imagine
layers of hard,
yeah, it'd be the
top.
Regular PK insecurity, and then this other thing, I don't know how they would do it.
Yeah.
What about you?
I would say probably like I am impatient as all get out.
Yeah,
you're shut up. No, it's true. I am. And it drives me crazy, because
yeah.
sometimes I'm like, I'm far too impatient to sit down and connect with
people. Have you ever done that thing where your brain literally realizes you're being impatient and is like, you should stop being impatient?
Oh, yeah.
While you're being impatient?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then like, I have a hard time showing or not showing that I'm feeling a certain way on my face. So like if I'm being impatient,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just frustrated with somebody doing something, and I'm just like, come on, get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's on my face.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realize that I'm being a jerk this way.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of like, I don't know, it maybe looks like I'm constipated or something. Like I'm fighting my emotions to just be like,
yeah.
play it cool.
Uh-huh.
Don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
But seriously, get on with the point.
All right. Note to self. This is a great evaluation so far.
Yeah,
great evaluation.
Is. Yeah, I
need to improve your impatience and your inability to feel feelings.
Yep. I am not the emotional type giver that
we have talked about before.
In our trainings.
Yes, in our trainings.
No.
Yeah, no. See, that's interesting to me. I always love the concept of normality anyway. Like,
yeah.
you know, I mean,
what is
everybody's a nerd for something. Just
oh,
stuff,
yeah.
Right. So without further ado, we're going to roll into the very first interview. This is with Anne McGettigan, my favorite last name we've ever had on the podcast. She's the executive director of the Seattle Counseling Service. Here she is. All right, so we're here with Executive Director Anne McGettigan. Is that right?
Very good pronunciation.
Awesome.
Great,
success.
She is from the Seattle Counseling Center. So, Anne, thank you very much for being on the show.
Of course.
So, Anne, first we'll do the low-hanging fruit, easy question. What is it that your organization does for the community, and can you give us a little history about the Seattle Counseling Center?
Sure. Well, first of all, I would say although our legal name is Seattle Counseling Center, we are doing business and have been for many years as Seattle Counseling Service. So that's just one other thing as people are looking for.
Absolutely.
There can be some confusion about that. Um, So Seattle Counseling Service has been around for 49 years. Mm. We will, next year we'll be celebrating our 50th anniversary. We are the first program or organization of our kind in the country to serve the LGBT community with behavioral health care.
Nice.
Yeah, so we beat out New York and L.A. and San Francisco.
Yeah.
So we really are the very first program in the country. If you think about 1969, the mm-hmm. year of the Stonewall Riots,
yes,
is the year that we began to do the work that we continue to do to this day.
Right, right. Were the Stonewall Riots something that you know of that motivated the creation of the Seattle Counseling Service, or was that just happened to be something that was happening at the time?
I think it was definitely something that was happening at the time, but I think it was indicative of the environment that we were living in. I mean, I wasn't here at the time, but, mm-hmm. You know, it just coincided. I think that year was one of a lot of upheaval and change in 1968 and 69.
Right.
And then specifically for the community, for at the time we would talk about lesbian and gay mm-hmm. folks, you know, that was a pivotal moment. And so, that was in New York, of course. But here in Seattle, the founding father of Seattle Counseling Service was a pediatrician who was curious about why boys were hanging out in Pioneer Square and seemed to be homeless and seemed to be engaged in, you know, sort of risky behaviors. And mm-hmm. he started interviewing them and discovered that they were gay boys who'd been kicked out of their homes.
Wow.
And were basically doing sex work for survival.
Oh, man.
So he was very worried about their safety and their ability to survive. So he started the Seattle Counseling Service as a sort of peer outreach program, and using graduate students at the UW who wanted to work with gay and lesbian youth and mm-hmm. adults. Mm-hmm.
So when a client comes to Seattle Counseling Service, what sort of services do you provide those individuals?
We have a comprehensive set of outpatient mental health services, which includes intake and assessment, mm-hmm. Individual therapy, medication management, psychiatric services. We do couples work and family work,
yeah.
as well as offer a broad array of support groups. And then, so that's on our mental health side. And then we also have, we're also licensed to provide outpatient chemical dependency treatment or substance use disorder services. So we do the whole range of work with folks who are beginning their process of recovering from their addiction.
Right.
And then we also have a pretty sort of cutting-edge harm reduction program that focuses on gay, bi, and trans men who are using crystal methamphetamine.
Mm.
And working with folks around crystal meth in a way that gives people room to enter into treatment at their pace rather than only having an abstinence-based program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
So for that program where mm-hmm. you have the you're providing services for people who are using crystal meth, is that more based off of what has happened in Washington State regarding drugs? Like, we've had an explosion there for that kind of drug use.
Yeah, I mean, this program is actually 20 years old, so mm-hmm. we've been doing that work for a long time. But crystal meth, particularly in our LGBT community, particularly with gay, bi, and trans men, is really linked. We've had an epidemic for a long time, and there's really close affiliation between crystal meth use and risk for HIV transmission. Mm. So we've been doing that work very actively because there's a lot of stigma, too, around folks who are using crystal meth, particularly injectors. And so we have folks who are in that community, who are part of the community, who are active users or who are recovering users, who are connecting and reaching out to folks and mm-hmm. getting them safer sex supplies and safer use supplies. Mm-hmm. And in that process, eventually, hopefully helping them decrease their use and come into recovery when they're ready.
Yeah. So we've already heard some examples of the type of hardships that folks experience when they come to the mm-hmm. Seattle Counseling Service. What are some of the examples that you see that kind of run through our theme for the hardships that folks come in? What are some of the main ones you see?
Well, I think, we just ran our numbers for last year. We're about to put our annual report out into the world. And one of the things that I think about a lot is how much poverty there is within our community. Oh. There can be this perception that, you know, somehow LGBT folks are not suffering with poverty in the same way that maybe heterosexual folks are. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely not true. So we see huge barriers, economic barriers. 87% of our folks that we served last year live at or below the level of poverty that's acceptable. And so that adds all kinds of things, you know, if you mm-hmm. think about rents, how expensive it is to live in
right.
Seattle, King County, yeah. or really anywhere
on Earth now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Long Puget Sound, anywhere. That's one piece, but then access to, employment or livable wages. If you think about especially folks who are struggling with addiction mm-hmm. or mental health issues, their ability to engage in meaningful work can be impaired. So, mm-hmm. Helping people, making sure that people get the support and the resources that they need in order to be more engaged in a meaningful way is really critical for us.
Awesome.
So does your organization partner up with any other organizations when it comes to like employment or securing jobs for your clientele?
Well, actually, it's interesting. We do work with DVR and other large entities uh-huh. around helping, get the resources that they need. We partner with, folks like Goodwill and other supported employment programs in the area. But we also recognize, and we're right now just starting to participate in a economic initiative that's specifically looking at trans folks, because we know that trans-identified individuals suffer even more employment discrimination or access to employment is more challenging for them. So we're actually participating right now in doing a survey with trans folks to sort of learn more about where those barriers are and figure out what we can do in collaboration with other organizations to improve the well-being and livelihood of trans-identified folks. So we're not taking the lead on that.
Sure.
There are trans-led organizations that are doing that, but we're really happy and willing to participate in sort of learning more about what those challenges are and mm-hmm. how we can support people.
Yeah, that's true. So this may sound like a question that we already know the answer to, but how important is mental health counseling to your clients?
I think it's really critical to be able to access quality mental health mm-hmm. counseling, and if needed, psychiatric care, mm-hmm. medication, and therapy can be absolutely life-changing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I worry sometimes still that there's stigma related to accessing therapy.
Oh, there's definitely
psychiatric services.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And I think I talk a lot about the combination of homophobia, internalized homophobia, and stigma, mm-hmm. and how that can really make it more challenging for some of our community members who really need care and need access to make that contact with us. So.
Right.
One huge example for me was when the Affordable Care Act rolled out in 2014. I thought we had done a great job of helping people get enrolled in Medicaid who would be eligible based on their low-income status. But when 2014 started, we were inundated with folks who had we had never seen before, who had finally gotten coverage, Medicaid coverage, and once they had that insurance, they came marching to our door. Mm. And we saw, we increased our the number of clients we were serving by, it tripled the number of folks that we were able to serve.
Wow.
And so for me, that was a lesson about the need that people have to feel empowered, to reach out, but have to have the coverage that they need to be able to pay for their care.
Yeah, yeah. Mental health in and of itself is such a stigma-related industry, because I think that it spans across, you know, any sort of gender identification. There's still this idea that if you go maybe and need mental health counseling, that somehow you're weaker than everybody else. It's very strange.
Right. You know? Yeah. And we see that a lot. We did a bunch of outreach and research a couple of years ago, because we're really interested in also figuring out who are we not serving.
Yeah.
And we know that we have work to do around reaching and serving immigrant, refugee, and undocumented LGBT community members. So we did a bunch of outreach and research to sort of uncover what are those barriers. And definitely not just in these lots and lots of different communities, it does span across cultures as well. And so how we think about getting help, reaching out and having that kind of resource, you're absolutely right. People can see it as, if I need help, that means I'm not managing things. I'm not as good as someone else.
Right. That leads me to an interesting question. You may not know the answer to this, so feel free to say you don't know. But it sounds like you have then, your organization has dealt with folks who, sounds like refugees from other areas suffering persecution. Is there any way you can talk, based on that sort of small anecdotal evidence, about the difference in the way? Do you see that we are here in this country sort of, I feel like we may be evolving on some of our viewpoints, however slow it may be, whereas maybe international norms have not quite caught up to that sort of thing. Do you see that?
Yeah, I would say, even though we're really dipping our toe into this work, it feels like it's vast, and we have a lot
to learn.
We have a lot to learn as an organization that's predominantly, Americanized, and we, are operating in the U.S. But yeah, we definitely see even words that people use to describe their identity as what we might think, I might think of as, queer identified or a lesbian or gay, those words, those words resonate in some cultures and in some countries as dangerous words.
Yeah.
And so there are other ways to describe identity that are less threatening.
Yeah. Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you talk about...
I was just going to say, one thing is that we also have had the pleasure of hosting a few different delegations from other countries of folks who are doing work in their home countries around LGBT civil rights. So, for example, we're hosting a group called Outright International is bringing a group of folks from China to visit a few different places in the U.S. and will be one of their stops. And these are folks who are doing work in a country that is, where it's still pretty challenging to be out and to live your life. So it's been great to be able to have that sort of cultural connection and talk about what we do and how we do it, as well as learn how mental health and other services are being offered in really interesting ways in countries where you can't put a rainbow sign on top of your building
and have
people come in.
Yeah, so yeah. What a great point.
It's been great for us to have that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Nice. Can you talk about what success looks like for your clientele?
Success is really, it really varies. And we talk about this because we see people on a wide spectrum of sort of challenges that folks have. So we serve everyone from folks who are persistently, seriously mentally ill and who are impaired, they have psychiatric impairment that will mean that for them, success might be being able to engage more socially. They may be managing phobias or other, you know, significant depression or psychosis or other significant symptoms and issues. So for someone in that category of need, success might be, hey, coming to therapy,
sure,
you know, every week, engaging in a support group, making a friend with another person for the first time, going out and doing some social activity. So decreasing their symptoms and decreasing their isolation, decreasing their symptoms and increasing their engagement in the world is very powerful and can be incredibly life-changing. And so we definitely have some of our folks who would be that we would consider that a great success.
Excellent.
Then we have clients who, you know, are situational, and so they're like breaking up, their relationship's ending, and they're needing support around that and trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
And so success in that situation would be more like, okay, I can manage this. I have the help I need. I have a plan. I can, you know, make the changes I need to make, and I have the support to do that. With my counselor and, you know, there's maybe with a support group. I would say there are dramatic successes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe one of the things that we do, and I'm honored that we do it, is I believe that we save lives. You know, there are people who really struggle with suicide or suicidal ideation who find a safe haven with us and work their way back into the world and make the choice to be in the world. And for me, that's one of the most profound successes that we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. So let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to start giving to Seattle Counseling Service. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Well, as you probably know, all of us as nonprofit organizations have to rely on probably a variety of funding just to operate. And we're, you know, blessed, I think, to have resource in terms of benefits, Medicaid benefits or commercial insurance that people can use to pay for their care. But there are lots and lots and lots of folks who don't have that kind of resource, and it's what we call uncompensated care, because we serve folks regardless of their ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so every donation that comes our way goes to support folks who would not be able to, can't pay for their care.
Mm-hmm.
And so we carry that uncompensated care, and donations really help fill that gap for us. It's not completely filled at all, and so, you know, we're always looking for more resources, but individual donations really make a huge difference. And I love workplace giving because it's such, and I do it myself, it's such a kind of easy way to make a difference without really paying close attention, you know.
It's
an easy way to support the work.
Excellent sales job, Anne. Nicely
done.
Thank you. Way to sell the workplace giving. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Well, I just, you know, I used to do a lot of workplace giving pitches, and a long time ago, it's been a while, but
you still got it.
I really do think workplace giving is one of the things I want us to get better at as an organization. Because it is such an easy way for people to make significant contributions.
Exactly. Yeah. We're biased. We love
workplace
giving.
So before we go, do you have any upcoming events or any programs you'd like to highlight?
Well, sure. It's Pride Month, and so we're all exhausted already.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet.
It's June 14th, but so let's see what's going on. We will be out and about all week. The last weekend of the month in Seattle will be Gay Pride, you know, LGBT Pride.
Yeah.
And so we'll be at Trans Pride, at the Dyke March. We'll be at Family Pride on Saturday, and we'll be out there on Sunday for Pride Fest. We participate in Pride Asia at the end of the month, at the end of May, and Bellevue College just had Pride, their first Pride ever,
that's cool.
A couple of days ago. So we try to be out there running around and tabling and being in booths and connecting with people. So that's what's going on this month. And then in August, on August 12th, we're having our Leo party at Neighbors, which is a fundraiser for SCS and Youth Care.
Okay.
And it's a fun drag show, and you know, the RuPaul's Drag Race, a couple of their contestants will be there.
Nice.
And all proceeds support SCS. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
We'll be doing World AIDS Day at the end of the year, but no, we try to be out and about as much as possible, just because we also want to hear stories from our clients who've, you know, moved on.
Yeah.
And so they come back and tell us how they're doing.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. Excellent. Well, Anne, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate you sharing information on Seattle Counseling Service. Thanks a lot.
Of course. You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, that was Anne McGettigan talking about Seattle Counseling Service. We're going to roll you right into the interview with Program Manager Brandon Knox of the Lambert House. Here's Brandon. Okay, so we are here now with Program Manager at the Lambert House, Brandon Knox. Brandon, thanks for coming.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we heard that you had a little automobile trouble on your way in.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for braving it and coming in.
Oh, of course.
All right. So, so can you give us a little history on the Lambert House and what it does for the community?
Sure, yeah. Lambert House is actually the oldest 501c3 incorporated nonprofit solely dedicated to LGBT youth in the world.
Oh,
seriously?
Wow. Yes. In the world?
Seriously. It was founded in 1981 by Dr. Bob Deischer. He was trained as a pediatrician and served as the director of a medical clinic at the University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw patients out in the community that were having negative health outcomes, that were part of the LGBT community. And he thought, you know, part of the reason why they're having these outcomes is that they're really isolated. They're not connected to each other. And he thought he could do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And AGLIA, the Association of Gay and Lesbian Youth Advocates, was born in April of 1981, received 501c3 status in May of 1981. And we've been in our current location on Capitol Hill, 15th Avenue, since 1991.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the first organization to open daily drop-in in 1991 for LGBT youth.
Okay.
Today, we offer more than 30 programs, services, and events year-round.
Nice.
Mostly facilitated by volunteers. We have a very small paid staff. And really what we're trying to do is continue that mission that Dr. Bob Deischer's, you know, set out with to end the isolation the LGBT youth experience, to improve their health outcomes, both short-term and long-term.
Yeah.
And we provide as many social opportunities as we can for LGBT youth to make friends, to be together, and participate in healthy, supportive activities.
So do folks get to stay at the Lambert House, or is it more like this is sort of the jumping off point to the different sort of activities and programs you offer?
We're a community center and operate drop-in 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So we don't offer any housing, but we do have close relationships with the agencies in Seattle that do offer housing and that support LGBT youth well.
Excellent.
Nice.
Excellent. That's awesome.
Yeah, housing in Seattle. We've talked to many charities about just like poverty in Seattle or just in our region and housing. I imagine that it is something that you see on a daily where you find that people can't get housing.
Yes, we work with a huge range of youth.
Mm-hmm.
About 80% of our youth are from low income or very low income socioeconomic situations. Mm-hmm. Just under 10% of our youth currently are homeless.
Wow.
And many of them are homeless because of rejection by their families, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Still up here, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. So what's the driving force for LGBTQ youth who come to the Lambert House? What brings them there for the most part?
98% of the youth. So we have an intake form where we learn a lot about them, demographic information that we are able to use to report to funders without sharing names. But we have a couple of spots where youth are able to write in and tell us what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. 98% of them write that they're looking to make friends, find friends, get friends. They all feel sort of alone in that. They sort of think like, oh, are people going to like me? Am I going to make friends? And when we tell them, like, almost everyone that walks through this door writes down that same thing. It's really a relief for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So do you find that Lambert House is definitely more of a connecting ground for them, not only within the LGBTQ youth community, but beyond that into other communities?
Absolutely. Just sort of an example of that, we have former youth that have come back to volunteer. I am actually a former youth of Lambert House myself.
Oh, nice.
I attended while I was in college at the University of Washington, and it was my first real strong connection to the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. We have volunteers that were youth in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And a lot of our alumni youth, even if they don't come back to volunteer, they want to remain connected as donors once their sort of life is underway, or they just stop in and say hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about intersectionality and how it affects the people that you serve?
Yeah. So for more than a decade now, Lambert House has served a higher percentage of youth of color in our programs than exist within our geographic reach.
Okay.
And we know that communities of color face additional barriers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And especially LGBT people in communities of color, that the barriers that they face, they're a lot harder to overcome. They need the social support even more sometimes.
Yeah.
And, we're really happy that we're seeing so many youth from these communities that are taking advantage of what we offer. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about that, and it's actually really common for youth at the house to have conversations around struggles that are happening in the community, how they can be a part of resolving those issues as youth themselves and as they are sort of moving into adulthood and figuring out what that means for them. I'd say that intersectionality, and that's just sort of one example, but it's something we talk about actively. It's something that youth are engaged in, that as an agency we're engaged in.
It sounds like one of the things that your guys' organization really thrives on is like a sense of positivity in the face of probably pretty negative things, right? I mean, most of the time, most of the organizations we frankly talk to have a tough time being able to fight through some of that negativity and still present a very positive environment. You guys, it seems to me that your strength is we're going to provide you something positive.
Absolutely. I remember this from being a youth, but even being there every day as a staff member, you walk in the space. I just met with somebody yesterday, a young person who was brand new. And one of the things he said to me was, everyone is so nice here.
Yeah.
And I hear that a lot. And right. I felt that when I was a youth. And that is a big part of how we're creating community.
Yeah.
You know, the point is that we want LGBT youth to feel normal, and we want them to have what would be called normal adolescent development experiences that they might not be able to have in other spaces of their life.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think we may be getting away from even heterosexual youth having normal it seems like the major thing for me is that seems to be something where we're starting to lack across the board, a sense of like community coming together. It's really cool to see that at least in a community that still struggles with being accepted, which is stunning up here, has a place where that can happen.
Yeah. And, we see youth that attend, a number of youth that attend nearly every day.
Yeah.
And this becomes a core part of their socialization and they come to hang out with their friends. They come to be a part of creating community themselves. We have youth that participate in planning large events. Our Pink Prom on May 19th had 395 youth
attendees. Oh, that's cool.
Almost double our previous largest.
Wow, that's
awesome. The largest youth event Lambert House has ever had. And we've been doing events like that since 1997. I think we're doing really great things.
Awesome.
So when you talk to people who used Lambert House in the 90s and they've come back to volunteer, and then between that experience and then your experience when you were in college and then what kids are experiencing now, do you find like something like the cell phone age has really changed how kids interact with each other and think that it's okay to like reach out and like there are people just like them who are suffering just like them?
Yeah, so I think some things that have changed are that there's a lot more visibility in the media.
Yeah.
There are starting to be more and more LGBT characters in TV shows and movies, and that sort of exposure is really great.
Yeah.
There are also cultural shifts happening. We see more and more parents bringing kids to Lambert House
because
the parents find us and want their kids to have a positive social community with other kids that are like them.
Sure.
So there are definitely some really great things going on. And, you know, the internet and smartphones are definitely a part of that. It gives youth access to information they didn't have access to before that is really helpful for their health. And social connection a little bit. When we talk to youth at the house and we say, you know, you can find each other online now, is there a need for a place like Lambert House? They always get really worried that we're even asking that question.
Yeah.
And they say things like, you know what, it's fine to talk to people online and like build those relationships, but if we were to get together in person, it's one-on-one, it feels like a date, there's all this pressure, it's really awkward. But when we come to Lambert House, we get to let go of all that pressure, we get to make friends and hang out and have a good time, and there's space and there are other people. It's a totally different atmosphere. So I would say, you know, the internet and smartphones, it doesn't really solve the isolation piece much, but it is great access to information. And when youth are at the house, they're doing art, they're playing games, they may be playing video games, but they're playing together. And there's a lot of really active social connection. They're not just sitting on couches next to each other on their phones. Imagine teenagers doing.
So this this question always leads me to ask a question about where you see things going. So number one, do you think there are enough safe spaces today for LGBTQ youth? And the second question is, it sounds like you've been associated with the program for a long period of time. Do you get a sense that things are getting better for the community?
I would say that on the whole, things are getting better, but there are still a lot of challenges. And it really depends on where you are. I mean, even in the city of Seattle, there are youth that are struggling. And the further you go out from a major city, the fewer resources there are going to be for LGBT youth, the less visibility there is, less access. And it gets less safe the further out you go to be out. That also depends on one's individual family, their school. But I hear from youth that come in from outside of Seattle, out in rural areas of King County, that tell us there are a lot of people out there that don't like us, that don't support us. We don't feel safe. We have youth that come to Lambert House and spend up to 2 hours on public transportation just to get to us. We see youth from 133 zip codes, equally distributed north, south, east, and west. It's really incredible. And so to get to the first part of your question, I would say no. There are not enough safe places for LGBT youth out there, especially when you go outside of the city. And the exciting thing about that is that Lambert House is going to be helping to solve that problem, at least in King County. We received funding from the Best Starts for Kids grant opportunity, and that money will go towards creating and supporting 21 LGBT youth peer support groups in small and rural communities throughout King County.
That's nice. Really excellent. That's awesome.
That's cool.
That's awesome. That's excellent. So let's say someone hears the podcast and they want to start giving to the Lambert House. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Yeah. So Lambert House as an agency is uniquely efficient with donor dollars. And we do that, first of all, by having a really small paid staff. Mm-hmm. Currently, we have two full-time folks, myself and the executive director, and we have a few part-time folks. Most of our direct service is provided by long-term, heavily vetted, highly dedicated adult volunteers.
Nice.
They act as role models, mentors. They chaperone our drop-in space, facilitate programming, support groups, activities, dinner five nights a week. Our volunteers purchase groceries for their dinners, cook in our kitchen, and eat with the youth.
Awesome.
It's a home-cooked family-style meal.
Yeah.
And we have about 70 volunteers a week, about 100, at least 100 different people within a month in various roles. If we were to replace those folks with paid staff, we would need at least five, if not six, full-time folks.
Wow.
And that's really expensive.
Yeah, of course.
But this has been a part of Lambert House's model since its founding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The organization didn't hire its first paid staff until, I believe, 1993, more than a decade after it was founded.
Wow.
So donor dollars really can... They're supporting our programming, just like donating to any other nonprofit. It's supporting our operating expenses and what we're able to do for youth. Right now, we do have a capital campaign. Mm-hmm. So in 2016, we were facing an extreme risk of losing our facility.
Really?
Yes. Mm. We had been leasing from the same family since 1991. Mm-hmm. And they decided that they wanted to sell the building. And so... we searched high and low for another location to move to. And in Seattle, really, there was nothing available. Where we're located is important because we're central to the region. It's a transportation hub. And that's why youth are able to get to us from so far away, which is really important. If we move too far from Capitol Hill downtown, it would make it difficult for youth in the opposite direction to get to us.
Sure. Right.
The fact that we're in a Victorian-style house is really important to the kids. They feel like they're at home. They feel really comfortable. They were very clear that they really did not want us to move to what would feel like a sterile sort of office environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the affordability for rent in Seattle is out of
non-existent.
Yeah.
So we were facing a real crisis of not having somewhere to operate or being forced into operating somewhere where we would serve far fewer youth, which could put funding in jeopardy. So an angel donor stepped forward and offered a 0% interest $2 million loan, which we were able to use to purchase the property. We're very happy that we didn't have to move and interrupt our programming and service to the community.
Yeah.
And now we are trying to raise money both to pay back that loan and to do maintenance renovations and expansion in our current location.
Excellent.
Right on.
Yeah. So our total goal is $5.5 million.
Yeah.
And we are seeking... folks that can make large contributions and help us really move that campaign forward while also maintaining our fundraising for our operations.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. I think an important thing for your listeners and for the public to know is that the vast majority of our operation support and the support the organization receives comes from individuals in the community, folks that care about our mission, that want to support the work that we do. We have been a recipient of funding from the city of Seattle since the early 90s, but that has been the only long-term source of government funding.
Yeah.
Our King County funding is brand new, and you know, individuals in the community really are what power us, both through the 100 volunteers that we have a month, donations of furniture, books, and other in-kind items that we need, and donations of cash. Majority of it comes from folks that really like what we do and want to support it.
Nice. And we didn't really talk about this too much, but does Lambert House, you guys don't offer any services that are like mental health specific or like drug counseling? Do you go outside for those services?
Yeah. So we do a lot of short-term case management and resource referral.
Mm-hmm.
We're very well networked and very well known within the social service community in Seattle. And when youth need support, We help them find those resources, and we provide as much support that they need to be successful mm-hmm. to connect to those programs and services available right. in the community.
Awesome.
Do you get success stories, like people who come back and say, hey, guess what happened to me? It's awesome. Life is great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We do. When those alumni come back, it's really great to hear those stories. I mean, people that come back to volunteer
yeah.
or even alumni 1, 2, 3, 4 years after they age out, just come back to say hi and let us know how they're doing.
Yeah.
It's really incredible.
That's awesome. Nice. That's excellent.
So do you have any upcoming events or programs that you want to highlight?
Well, of course, we have our Pride Weekend celebration at mm-hmm. the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited about that. We're open for drop-in on the Saturday of Pride Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only weekend day the whole year that we do drop-in.
Yeah.
Normally, it's Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a committee of youth that are planning activities to happen. And then Sunday morning, we have brunch. It's a family brunch, so youth can invite relatives or their GSA advisor if they want to come and have brunch with us, and then we'll all be in the parade.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, my first Pride celebration was with Lambert House in the parade.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really special
life's coming
experience.
Full circle,
I know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for coming, braving the conditions and being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so that was our interview with Brandon Knox of the Lambert House. He's the program manager there. Really interesting organization. I really loved the sort of infusion of positive energy that they were trying to put into the experience of being LGBTQ youth. And I think, honestly, when you see the sort of stats about, you know, about suicide rates and those sort of things, or self-punishing mm-hmm. behavior, the way that folks have it in a much higher rate within this particular community, I think it starts with simple things like offering up positive moments.
Yeah, and having a place to connect physically mm-hmm. with someone, to like have someone look you in the eye and be like, hey,
mm-hmm.
I'm here, yeah. you're here, yeah. let's be friends.
Yeah, and it takes an uphill, it's an uphill battle, because a lot of times folks get conditioned a certain way mm-hmm. to be skeptical, to be negative,
yeah.
to distrust people. It takes a long time to like break down those barriers. So it's nice to see organizations that basically are in it for the long haul and not just trying to like churn people out. They're yeah. legitimately trying to establish relationships and change people.
Yeah. And something that Brandon had said, and I could see this happening with people who go to Seattle Counseling Service as well. That question of online services, you know,
yeah,
is that something that you'd want in the future?
Right.
And people get afraid
they
that
freaked
oh
out.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're gonna shut down. Yeah. Don't do that. We yeah. need this physical place.
Right.
Like for both of those places,
mm-hmm.
a physical place is important.
Yep.
I mean, we're human. We all
yeah.
need to connect physically
yeah.
with each other.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So this to me, I think, is one of the more interesting set of facts and figures, because there is so much research now being done. So do you have some facts and figures on LGBTQ issues within the community?
Yeah. So I found this graph and I'll share it online. But there's this mm-hmm. thing called the True Colors Fund. And they did these two pie charts mm-hmm. that are pretty.
Oh.
Yeah. See how pretty they are?
Yes, they are.
They're
wow.
very pretty.
Wow.
They're simple and pretty. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very clean graphics.
Ah,
I'm just going to
like
talk
that?
About the graphics
know,
instead
right?
of the actual data. Nerd. So they have these two graphs. One
yes.
that's the needs of LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness
mm-hmm.
and then needs of transgender youth experiencing homelessness. So for their needs, like service providers surveyed identified housing and identity as two greatest needs for these groups. So emotional and acceptance and emotional support is a big one for the LGBTQ. They put LGBTQ, not LGBTQ,
yeah.
which is weird for me to say.
I know,
I'm so
right?
used to
you're missing the T.
I'm missing that T because they pulled the transgender
they pulled
out.
Pulled the T out.
They just took that out.
And just put it in a different graph.
So yeah, housing
don't
is the biggest
thing. Don't
appreciate
that.
Yeah, why are you messing me up here,
gosh.
People? So housing is the biggest problem they're facing. Like for both, it's almost 30% for both groups of kids.
Yeah.
And then for both. Education is on there as a smaller thing, but healthcare, employment, transitional support, and acceptance and emotional support.
Yeah.
Those are major issues.
Obviously makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. That makes sense.
And then I looked into some information about Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you know this, Washington's amazing.
Yeah, we're like number one in all things. California. Or Southern, Western, Northern California.
Three Californias.
Whatever you're going to be in November.
Yeah. You too, New York. So in Washington State, they have had certain statuses for different things like same-sex sexual intercourse legal status, mm-hmm. because you had to have that be like apparently you couldn't. That wasn't legal to have sex with someone who's the same gender as you until 1976 in Washington.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Since 2001, mm-hmm. Washington State has provided benefits to same-sex partners of state employees.
Huh, okay.
So that's something that's been happening for over a decade.
Uh-huh.
And recognition of relationships in Washington State, same-sex marriage has been since 2012, uh-huh. but domestic partnerships have been something that is allowable uh-huh. for since 2007.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then in 2017, a Public Religion Research Institute poll found that 73% of Washington State residents supported same-sex marriage,
mm-hmm.
21% were opposed, and 6% were unsure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's very much an accepted thing
yeah.
in Washington State.
Yeah.
And then I found this last thing that that's very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Seven cities, the most friendliest for LGBTQ community.
Okay.
Okay. Can you guess any of those seven cities?
The most friendly cities in the country?
No, Washington
in
State.
In Washington State. Yeah. So we're going to go Seattle.
Yeah, that is number five.
Seattle's the fifth friendliest gay city?
Yeah. In Washington State, yeah.
What?
According to this list, yes.
Olympia.
Is number two.
Okay, okay.
Okay. You're doing good so far.
Tacoma?
Is number seven. And Tacoma,
oh.
fun fact, was previously ranked number one on the Advocates list of queer cities in America. Tacoma. Hmm.
Tacoma.
Yeah, way to go, Tacoma.
How about Bellingham?
Number three. You're really good at this.
Thanks. let's go. Oh, boy. Let's see here. How about... I really, really want to say an East Side
you should.
City. How about... Let's go with Spokane.
That's number six.
Hey-o!
Yeah, way to go. Two more. One of them I don't think you'll get because it was
It's really random.
To me.
Super
yeah,
random.
Very random.
Let's try. How about Everett?
No.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
give me the other two.
So it was number seven was Tacoma. Six is Spokane. Five is Seattle. Four is Vashon Island.
Oh, Vashon Island. See? Good old Vashon Island.
Yeah. A little random.
Yeah.
At least.
Used to play them in basketball.
Oh.
Good job, Vashon Island.
Yeah. Way to go, Vashon Island. Number three is Bellingham. Two is Olympia. And the number one, Washington State, friendliest city for mm-hmm. LGBTQ.
Yeah.
Vancouver.
Damn it, I was going to say that. Man.
You know what? You miss all the shots you don't take.
Yeah, I should.
Michael.
Oh, wow, thanks a lot. Wow. Yeah, Michael, come on the show.
Oh, Michael Jordan.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah, get away.
So that was very interesting conversations with Ann and Brandon. Overall, really cool to talk about this particular issue at this particular time because... It feels like we're still in a very different style of conversation with the entire issue.
Yeah.
In terms of the upcoming events, so we just actually did campaign leader trainings. We think they went pretty well. Our volunteers are currently in the recruitment process for folks all over the state to actually help assist in the Combined Fund Drive efforts. We'll also have folks able to order the supplies. We will be within the next month or so revealing the entire theme of Find Your Why and the different materials and different video content and all that sort of stuff. This will be a really connective kind of fun campaign for folks to be a part of.
Yeah.
We'll have local coordinator trainings in August. And then for everyone who is interested... or even went last year, we will be opening up the Masquerade Ball for tickets here within the next couple weeks. So you'll be able to get your tickets to this year's Bigger, Better, Badder Masquerade Ball.
I like it.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So that's our show for this episode. We really appreciate everybody swinging in and listening to it. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.